Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where did you come from?
So my name is Shauna. I'm originally from Drimna and my parents moved to Kingswood and Talla a good couple of years ago. So I've been living in Kingswood the last 16, 17 years.
How far was Kingswood from Drimna?
So roughly it's about 10 minutes drive, 15 minute drive, depending on traffic or if not you can use the Lewis line and stuff like that.
Do you know
that.
I don't know that area at all. Like I know, is the Black Forge over there?
Not really.
No.
No, so the Black Forge would be kind of on the Crumlin Road.
Right, okay.
Drimna, I was from Galtymore Drive.
Right.
So, like, it would be kind of near, let me see, Bluebell and stuff like
that. Right, okay.
Kind of over that way.
I literally don't know that area at all. Yeah. It's really mad because, like, I know I've had a couple of guests from over that side of the city. And even if I was to go over that side of the city, I'd be totally lost. Totally lost.
Where I feel most comfortable around, even though, like, I've lived in Kingswood the last 16 years. When I go around the Crumlin and Drimna area, I feel most comfortable.
Isn't it mad?
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Whereas, like, here, I don't know. Do I feel comfortable in Coolock? I'm not sure if I feel comfortable in Coolock. Yeah. I don't. Well, that's probably bad. They're probably all looking at me calling me a snipe bitch or something. But I don't know where I'm more comfortable, to be honest with you. Yeah, no, I think I'd be very comfortable around my ma's area. But and then around here, we don't really go out around here. So I just don't do that around here. Anyway, what am I doing? I'm talking shite. That's what I'm doing. Tell me this. Shauna, you reached out to me about a subject that I actually didn't know anything about. And that subject is what?
A molar pregnancy.
Okay. And then I heard somebody else talk about it and someone else reached out to me. And it's mad how the world works with all that.
Yeah.
But just before we go into that, and because you're quite nervous,
I am.
We'll take it back the way I always do. Tell me about your growing up in Drimna. Who's in the house? How many's in the house?
So there's four children. There's three girls and one boy.
What was that like?
It was, I had a really good childhood, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely close to my sisters and my brother. We grew up in Drimna, so my youngest sister was around 5 or 6 months, and then my mum and dad decided to move to Kingswood for a bigger house, basically. So I went to school in Art Scalena on the Crumlin Road. I loved school, but secondary school wasn't as great as primary school, to be honest, you know, kind of.
Why?
I would have been kind of bullied in school and stuff like that in secondary school.
Tell me about that.
So when I was in second year, I was really pally with everyone. But this new person came into the school. She was from around the area, but she just picked on me, didn't like me from the time she seen me, took all of my friends away from me. She used to just, like, if I came to school with a new bag or whether it was something different about me, she would always pick on it and just wouldn't leave me alone. So I started then suffering with some anxiety as well when I was about 15 or 16, and that really did, like, affect my confidence and stuff like that. And but I still finished school and
isn't it mad because, like, I was saying to you earlier, like, I have a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And she's just gone into first year.
Yeah.
And I think, isn't it, it's a power play.
Yeah.
With certain people that come into the school, and it's like, who's going to be queen bee? You meet a load of friends and then you kind of disperse and you go into your own little groups and stuff like that. I think it's horrific that one person can come in and just take a dislike to you for whatever reason and then decide you're going to be my victim and I'm going to make
and
your
life
hell.
That's exactly the way it was. Mm. I've never drank or smoked. So as a type of teenager, I was extremely quiet. Mm. So I would never drink, and still to this day, I've never drank, never even tried it.
Right.
Yeah. So Dash used to bully me on that, you know, because I wasn't out drinking. I wasn't out partying. And don't get me wrong, like, I loved going out with my friends. It's something that I always used to love. But when she came to the school, I would have been kind of popular and stuff like that. Everyone was my friend. I'd get on with everyone, even down as far as the teachers. I'd get on so well with everyone, where she just didn't like that. So she made sure that was going to come to a stop, and, you know, just would make stuff up about me and stuff like that that wasn't true. So it really did affect my mental health and stuff like that. But
because I was saying that to Paul, like, we were talking about he actually just said it to me. We were talking about the 100 episode that's actually passed now. Yeah, we just bypassed 100 episode. But we were sitting down and saying, would we tell my story? Yeah. And then, like, because I have one, just one particular part of my story that everyone asks about. But I was like, oh yeah, when I was bullied in secondary. And Paul was like, what? Yeah. He was like, you were bullied. And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah. I was
bullied
bad. And a
lot of people don't talk about
it. Yeah.
Because I remember meeting my partner as well, and I always kept it quiet because I remember she actually destroyed me that much. I used to be afraid to tell people when I became like 18 and 19 that I didn't drink, because she used to say that's weird, like, who doesn't drink? Where it's just something that I don't need drink to have a good time. Mm. You know, like, I'd be the first up on the dance floor and stuff like that if I was at a wedding or a party. So I wouldn't, it's just something I didn't want to do. But even when I met my partner back then, all those years back, I kept it from him from age, just like that I was bullied or I didn't drink. I used to say, oh yeah, I'd have an odd drink, or I didn't. Mm-hmm. And then I remember just saying, why am I being like this? Like, I should just open up. And that's when I did then. And I just turned a corner then for myself. I am who I am.
Mm.
And
did it take you all that time? So during school, you didn't deal with it at all, did you know?
No.
Wow.
So I just didn't. I didn't tell my mum, didn't tell my dad, didn't tell my sisters. I'm really close to me, as I said, to my sisters and my brother. Kept it all in. And I remember I used to get the loos to school from Kingswood, because we lived in Kingswood then. And I'd get the loos down to Black Horse, and I'd get off and then walk up then. And I remember I'd get to school and I'd go into school and I'd notice, I'd know by the looks. So she used to slag me, like, in certain things. Are we out drinking the weekend, or are we out doing this? And I'd say, oh no, I just went out with my friends. And I kept saying, I shouldn't have told her I didn't drink. I should have told her I did. I should have told her I used to go out and, you know, do different. But I didn't. I was just being honest. And I remember I used to just go into school, sign myself in, and I'd know she was in for another day of bullying me. And I'd walk back out and say to the teacher, I don't feel well. And I'd go home. God. And that went on for weeks until my parents said, what is going on? Like, what are you not telling us? What's going on in school? And then I just broke. I just started taking panic attacks every single day. I couldn't eat. I lost so much weight. I used to cry myself to sleep at night. Why can't you just not accept who I am? And, you know, just stop spreading lies about me, basically. And I remember going to her and asking her, what did I ever do on you? And she goes, no, I just dislike you. And that was her words to me. So, yeah.
And you do wonder, like, you wonder where these people come from. You wonder what is their motivation? What is their agenda? What are they getting out of it?
Like, why make someone else feel so bad? Mm. Like, I would never forgive myself to ever make anyone feel that bad.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I haven't even seen her now in years, thank God.
And that's the same, like, so the girl that did the same to me, now, thankfully, she left school very quickly.
Yeah.
But she was so dangerous. Like, she spread terrible lies about me.
Yeah.
And she was so dangerous that the teachers were believing these lies.
Oh.
And only that she left school. Now, I did end up having, like, I had, and I think some of the girls who listen to this, like Sandra and Amanda, will probably be like, what? Like, they probably don't even know about it, or I did know about it. But, like, I moved on with them, or I don't know how she left. And then that allowed me to become friends with other people then. Do you know what I mean? But she was lethal were our lives.
So she just took a dislike into you, and that was it.
And that was it.
That's exactly where I was. And then what I did was, she was continuing to want to be in the same school. So I left that school then. So I was around 16 and I left and went to a different school.
Did you just make that decision yourself, or?
My parents did as well. They were like, you can't do this anymore. And the teachers was always on my side, like, and even the principal. She said, Shauna, I can't imagine what you're going through. They could see it. But,
When you say you turned a corner, do you still carry that with you now a little bit, you think?
I do. I'm not going to lie. I do. Like, you know, I'm a really, I'm a type of person, I would speak to anyone, you know, and I'd never do any bad on anyone, or I love life. And I'd never say anything bad about anyone if it was, like, she was saying things about me that wasn't even true. She could go to bed at night and know that she's made up a bunch of lies about me that wasn't even, you know, I just could never make anyone feel the way she made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
Destroyed, like, most of me, like, growing up as a teenager, to be honest.
And this is what I say as well, that, like, with me, my bark is worse than my bite. Like, I will go at you, like, 110%, but then I always step back, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just think, because I've always been in that fight or flight mode, and I still continue to be, but I find it now that I try and not be, and try be a little bit more calmer in situations, especially, like, even the work environment, do you know what I mean? I try, where I would just love to say, you know, come here, you. And tell you how it is. I can't, do you know what I mean? Because you just can't, like, do you know what I mean? But also, sometimes I've been there and I've had to do that. But it's the fight or flight, you know, how am I going to deal with this situation because of what you've dealt with? Do you get me?
Yeah, no, I do get you. And still, like, I would carry that on, like, even, you know, like, the certain things. I'm a very soft person, and don't get me wrong. If someone was to say something to me, I'd probably, you know, get the feeling in my throat. I'm probably going to start to cry. But then I have got that fight that I hadn't got back all those years ago. Like, I wouldn't have had that fight in me, where now I stand up for what I think is right.
Mm-hmm.
Where back then I wouldn't. I just take it and take it, where now I don't.
And you wonder, like, does she have kids? What kind of parent is she? Like, do you give a shite? Like, but do you know what I mean? Like, you wonder, like, is her children.
I've often thought of that, to be honest. Especially being a mammy myself. And I'd think back and I'd say, like, because I remember saying to her years ago, like, please God, you're going to go on to have children. Would you like your child to be treated the way you've been treating me? She couldn't answer me. So it's always something I have asked myself. I wonder, has she got kids?
Mm.
I wonder, is she married, or, you know? It's just, but I haven't seen her, so I'm kind of glad.
Yeah. If they have any remorse, if they think back and go.
I wouldn't even say so, because the majority of my friends that I would have been very close to still doesn't really know the impact of how bad it was to this day. You know, I'd probably see some or hear from some of them on Facebook or Instagram, some of my friends from school, but they wouldn't know the impact that this person had on me back then. Only my parents would know, and my brothers and sister.
And thank God you had parents that are so
They were amazing.
Aware for that.
Yeah, they were just there through every step of the way. Like, it got so bad with my anxiety and stuff like that, and my panic attacks, I had to go to counsel. And the counselor kept saying, I still wouldn't tell the counselor, like, what was really wrong with me. And then I remember just, it was breaking point. I just told her everything. And, like, there's some things I don't really want to get into of exactly what this person did to me. But I remember telling her, and she was like, Shauna, you've just been building it up, and now your brain, you as a person, can't take it anymore. And I remember just spilling it all out and just telling her everything. And then that did help me heal, to be honest. I did become a different person then. And I have since then become a different person.
How has that manifested through you as a parent?
So basically, I have two children, 5 and 7, and they're both in school now, one in junior infants and one in first class. And I do always say, like, even my boy, like, always be nice. Even in the mornings, if I'm dropping them to my mum's before I go to work, or if I'm dropping them to school, some mornings I'm off, and I'd always say, Koa, always be nice, always be friendly. And if anyone ever bullies you or anything, well, mum, what does that mean?
I know.
you know, and I'm saying, like, it could mean, like, if someone picks on you, if someone calls you a name, or, you know, little things like that. I don't want to really, because he's mine, I want to keep him, you know, kind of still small. And so, yeah, I do tell him, like, if anyone bullies you, make sure now you go to your teacher and tell your teacher. I will, I promise you, man, but I'll never bully anyone, man. And he'd ask me, like, because now that he's 7, he's going 8 in May. And he'd say, but, man, were you ever bullied? And I'd tell him little tiny bits. I was like, yeah, Cole, someone treated me very bad, like, when I was in school, and it made Mammy very upset. And he'd kind of starting to learn where the little girl, she's 5, she wasn't.
Yeah. And that's the same as us, but, like, Aria, like, because we've just had documented that dyslexia diagnosis, and she was struggling big time with school. And, you know, like, she said to me when, so she's leaving the school, she's going into another school, and she came home and she said to me, Mam, I told all the children I'm leaving. And I was like, oh, and she's like, and even the ones who don't like me gave me a hug.
Oh.
And I was like,
and even to hear those words as a parent,
devastated. I was like, oh my God. And I kind of knew, because she is like with Aria, it's her game or no game, you know what I mean? She's a bit particular, and she has to learn that, you know what I mean? If they don't want to play with you, and you only want to play that, you're going to end up playing on your own. So you have to give and take. So I get that, and I'm not saying that she's bloody an angel, but, like, yeah, I just thought, oh God, you know what I mean? So, and, like, in a way, like, you know, people are saying to me, oh, it's going to be so hard for her to leave. I'm like, it's not going to be, because, you know, her sister was Queen Bee. Her sister was just, like, had her pals from Dineenra all the way through to sixth class. There was, like, about 10 of them, like, started when they were 3 in that school, all the way up.
So they were always so close. So close.
And there's just Aria, for some reason, just doesn't. And even though she's the softest child, and all my friends, all the adults, everyone loves her.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, where she's just not clicking. And I'm just trying to say to her as well, like, you know, and it's really hard to look at that. And then at the same time, then I'm looking at Amelia, and Amelia doesn't really like me talking about her, but, like, looking at Amelia, and I'm praying to God that we've got her to here, and we're going to get her to the rest of the way, because we don't want, you know, bullying starting, or I don't want her to be the bully.
Course.
Do you know what I mean? And I don't want that either, because that would be probably just as horrific to find out that your child's bully.
Oh, it'd be horrific. You know, I always say that myself. If I was to ever hear that, I'd be the first mammy. I wouldn't be one of these mammies. No, my son doesn't do that. My girl doesn't do that. I would always be, no, I want to hear two sides of it, because there's always 3 sides to every story, to be honest. But yeah, that is my worst fear as well.
And again, you have to, as you said, it's like, like, I watch for everything. Like, I watch for so much stuff because of, like, what I had. Like, I had an eating disorder. I had different things. So all of that stuff. But, like, say, same with you, the anxiety. So you will watch
kids
like a hawk.
Oh, I do. Yeah, and you have very to be overprotective, mammy.
And we have to also as well, not, as you say, we have to still mind them that we don't want them to be aware of all these things that possibly could happen to them.
I know. And that's exactly where I am, even with my 2. I'm telling them little bits, but I'm also keeping a lot from them because they're still only young.
Mm.
You know, like 5 and 7, like, I'm still trying to keep to me babies for as long as.
Yeah, and Aria is my baby. And everyone say to me, my friend, we were away the weekend, and a couple of people were saying to me, how many kids have you got? And my friend kept saying, one. And I was like, shut up, you have 2. And she's like, no, she's 1. She's only got Aria. And I said, but Amelia doesn't like me talking about her. Amelia doesn't want to be on my social media. Amelia doesn't let me take photos. Yeah. Like, I FaceTimed Amelia the other day, and she was in bed. And Dawn, my friend, was with me, and the other ladies were with me. And she was, like, on the phone like that to me.
I have one of them at home. Koa is only 7. And he's the exact same. Hates any photos. I just say, I hope people doesn't think I have favouritism.
That's what she said.
Because all I do have is Jovi, where Koa is the total opposite. Now, ma'am, no photos today.
Yeah.
I can never get a photo.
It's so bad. Like, she's just like, do not post that anywhere. And I'm like, oh my God. So literally, like, sorry to God, she was like, how many kids? 1, she's 1. I was like, Don, shut up. She was like, clearly Aria is your favourite. I was like, I don't have favourites.
Me too. Like, you love them the exact same. Yeah. No difference. It's just...
Yeah.
One likes photos and one doesn't.
Yeah. Tell me about your husband partner. Tell me.
So we are getting married in August.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, we've been together years, 12 years, 13 years, but we were friends for 15 or 16 years.
Oh,
and then
good.
We became lovers, should I say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got together in 2012. like officially together. Yeah. We were friends beforehand, and we got engaged quite quick. I'd say we were with each other about 6 months, and Dylan popped a question and asked, will you marry me? We were only young.
Very good.
So we're really looking forward now for the wedding in August, because then the children came along. So it was kind of put.
How's the plans going?
Stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah, stressful. We're nearly there. Everything is booked, and the majority of everything now is just paid for. It's just basically just other little things kind of along the way.
Yeah.
I never thought planning a wedding would be so stressful.
Yeah, I think my wedding was so stressful with all the planning that I did. Because somebody wasn't interested in planning at all.
See, Dylan is the same.
Yeah.
Dylan is the exact same. Like, some of our work colleagues would be asking him, did you get the, or have you got your cake? I don't know. I'll have to ask Sean.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be just.
No, I think I did. Back. I did push Paul to into those things. You know what I mean? But yeah.
I still do. But he's just like, no, once you're looking after it, because I know when you're looking after, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
I just.
And tell me this, do you work together?
We do.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so Dylan is a funeral director the last 15 years.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we work alongside each other. Dylan would be mostly out on the road and stuff like that, you know, where I'm mostly in the office.
And this is the thing, because I did one with Grace, podcast with Grace, because I was so interested in her, because she was the only kind of female funeral director I've ever met. So I was really interested in her, and I was like, come on. She's like, no. And I was like, you have to come on and talk about funerals with me. I was like, please. And especially because I have a friend who's totally obsessed with funerals. And I was like, you have to come on, but it's mad. So, and even like, you know, when my uncle died, they were saying, what do we do? And I was like, no, you just ring the funeral home and they do everything.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, and I was like, yeah, no, that's all you do, just ring them. I was like, ring them. My uncle on Sheriff Street in Jennings is at the top there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they were like, oh, I'll just ring. And they were like, but where do we do? And what about the morgue? I was like, no, the funeral home do everything. So you guys do absolutely everything.
Literally everything. So from that first phone call of when someone would lose someone, you just ring us and we take over and we do everything.
Do you enjoy it?
I do. When I started a year ago, nearly a year ago, I remember starting, and I remember saying to Dylan, oh my God, like it. Or, you know, because you're dealing with families at the worst times of their life, like that has lost someone that's so close to them. And then Dylan said, just try it and see how you go. But I actually ended up falling in love with it.
Did you?
Yeah. Because I'm a very caring person. I love looking after people, and I always have. So I kind of said to myself, I like to give to people, you know, like just to be there for them. So, yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it.
Do you, I won't, because I don't think I asked Grace, do you ever take a home with you?
Sometimes, you know, like when you would probably look after someone kind of in and around the same age as your own children, or someone young, different circumstances, you probably would come home, you'd sit on your couch at night and you'd probably say, oh, today was a hard day. You know, because you're dealing with people, as I said, at the worst times. And you'd kind of just, I'd hold my children that bit extra tight, and myself and Dylan, like we would do something on the weekends. We'd plan something on the weekends with the children, and that would kind of get both of our minds off. You know, it's, you do and you don't. It just depends kind of sometimes.
And how's he done it for 15 years? That's mad.
Yeah. So his dad was a funeral director.
Right.
And he just has known no different. Like from the age of 2 years of age, walking around a funeral home, he just was always around people that has passed and grieving families and stuff like that. So he literally knows no different. So from the time I met Dylan, I remember when we were friends going back all those years back, I remember saying to him, what do you work at? And he was like, I work on a building site.
No way.
I said, oh, tea. And about a week later, he was like, if I tell you what I do, are you sure you won't run off?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I won't. He was like, oh, I work for a funeral home. I'm an undertaker. And I was like, oh, that's very good. But he thought I would have been freaked out. But no. He's that type of person. Like, he really, really suits the role that he does. Mm. He's a very caring person as well. So even if I say so myself, he'd be very good that way.
Yeah,
so he's someone I've kind of like over the years that we've been together, I've always said it in the back of my mind. I'd be like, oh, I'd probably like to do that myself.
Mm.
You know, and I'd kind of feel like I was doing it myself because I'd hear so much of it at home.
Yeah.
So when I did start Massey Brothers there in August last year, it just felt like I was always doing it.
Yeah.
But I did say, I'll give it a few weeks or months and see how I like it. And then I end up falling in love with it and I really do enjoy it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think we definitely need more women in that area. Yeah.
Well, in Massey Brothers now, there's loads of women.
Is there?
Yeah, there's loads of women. There's kind of 50-50, like yeah. There'd be men and women, but there is a lot of women. And then my manager as well is a lady as well. So.
And I think it's probably just a perception because it's the men out that are in the cars, driving the cars.
That's exactly.
Doing the coffin thing. So I think that's the perception that it is a very male dominant environment, but actually probably not the case at all.
Yeah, like I looked after a family going back a couple of weeks ago and you would always see the man driving the hearse.
Mm.
You wouldn't really never see a woman kind of in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Where I went out on that funeral that day.
Yeah.
So it's kind of is starting to change where you would see women out on the funerals now. And it's nice as well. Because
I think
it does. And a lot of people says that to me when they come into the funeral home. They say, oh, it's not just all men. We're seeing women now, more women. And it is a nice thing like to kind of have a bit of both.
Yeah, because I think it's needed when you see that. So Shauna, talk to me then. You've two children.
Yeah.
And then tell me about your third pregnancy. Was it your third pregnancy?
It was, yeah. Okay. So it's coming up to a year. This time last year, I found out I was pregnant. So everything was great. I was so excited and happy. We couldn't wait to have that other baby. And, you know, whether we were going to have another boy or another girl, we were overjoyed, basically. And everything was fine. I done a pregnancy test. I started to feel a bit unwell, you know, the usual kind of symptoms. So I'd done a pregnancy test and I had literally only done the pregnancy test and it came straight up positive. So I remember saying to myself, well, I've had two other pregnancies and I'd always get like a faint line, like this would never kind of happen where it would be like straight away positive. So I remember going out and I told Dylan. I said, Dylan, it's positive, like really, really positive. And the two of us were excited. We couldn't wait, like even though you've only found out, you plan so much in your mind, you know. And I said, Dylan, it's very positive. And so I was just gonna say that the line is extremely dark, but adding up my dates, Rebecca, I was like, no way could in my head. I'm kind of that type of person, you know. I'd be like, this is strange. And me and Dylan were messing, we're like, maybe it's twins.
Yeah,
I was like, oh no, twins. So so then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I went to the doctor and the doctor had done a pregnancy test, done all the usual kind of checks, your blood pressure and stuff like that. And she actually said it to me herself. She said, Shauna, I've just done 3 pregnancy tests, she said, and they're really, really strong lines. For your many weeks, she says, your HCG levels must be extremely high.
Mm.
And I said, I noticed that when I was doing the pregnancy test back at home there 2 or 3 weeks ago. She goes, ah, yeah. She said, no, that can be totally normal. It's a great sign. Don't be worrying. So that evening, I went home. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up with this excruciating pain in my lower back, like really bad. And I remember waking Dylan up and I said, I can't stick this pain. It's really, really bad. So he got up and he says, will I get you like 2 paracetamol? But I'm the type, like, I wouldn't... Mm-hmm. I'm a bit iffish about taking any type of, you know, while pregnant and stuff like that. So I remember I said, I'll ring Hollistry. So I rang Hollistry and I got talking to this lovely midwife on the phone. And she said, Shauna, unless it's pain and bleeding, then come in to us. But if it's just pain, it could be either you have a kidney infection or something totally different. Just don't be worrying. So I just continued. I actually took a paracetamol, paracetamol, because she persuaded me on the phone just to take one. If you don't want to take 2, take 1. A hot water bottle and see how it goes after that. So the following morning I woke up, I went to the toilet and I was passing blood in.
Okay.
So I knew something was wrong. So I hadn't told anyone I was pregnant. I kept it very quiet. So I remember ringing my mum. And normally I would have went over to my mum. I'd have told my mum where it was just, I was panicking on the phone. I says, mum, I found out I was pregnant 2-3 weeks ago. And I'm now in such bad pain and I'm bleeding as well. So she said, right, she said, do you want to go to the hospital? Do you want me to come over and mind the kids? So my youngest sister ended up coming over with her partner and she minded the kids. So I got into the car and I says to Dylan, sitting in the car, I says, Dylan, I don't want to go to Hollistry. And he goes, why? He said, that's where you've had the 2 children. Like, I had 2 emergency C-sections on my other 2. So I was like, that's where you've always went. I knew the nurses. I knew some of the doctors.
Yeah.
I grew a bond with them. Like, I have some of them on even me Instagram, just lovely people.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying, well, just go there. Like, they know all your records and stuff like that you have from the kids. So now I was like, I want to go to Kiln. I was like, because I know this is bad, I said, and I want Hollistry to be just happy memories where I know something's going to happen. So I'm a kind of a bit of a negative person when it comes to that. So Dylan would be the positive one in the relationship. So he kept telling me, everything's going to be okay. You're going to come down, you're going to go down to the Kiln now and this can be totally normal. Now I was told it can be, like I was told on the phone, it can be totally normal. So I went into the Kiln. And he brought me straight in because at that stage I was bleeding quite heavily. So they kept thinking a topic. So they brought me in to, I went and I met this lovely nurse and she'd done some tests and stuff like that. And then they got a doctor from the surgery to come down. They were in surgery. So they came down and they'd done a scan and stuff like that. And he said what they could see was just like a sack. And I said, can you see anything in the sack? Because at the amount of weeks I was now, like I was 7 weeks, 3 days. So like they should have really seen something in the sack. The midwife said she could see something and the doctor said she couldn't. She said the sack looked abnormal. It didn't look right to come back in the next 2 days.
What?
Yeah, to come back in the next 2 days. So she just said, just go home, go to your local pharmacy, get some pads and stuff like that and paracetamol and Nurofen and just basically let nature take its course. So I'll never forget it, Rebecca. I actually left on my hands and knees. I was just crying and Dylan kept saying, Shauna, this, yes, hear the nurse. So I was going by the midwife. I was going and her was, but you're obviously going to go by the doctor. The doctor knows what she's saying.
Yeah.
So I went to the chemist, Dylan went in for me and got all the stuff that I kind of needed for nature to take its course when that's what she told me when I got home. So when I went home, the pain just got so bad. I could not stick it. At one stage, I was nearly vomiting with the pain. And she told me if that was the case to ring back. So I rang back and I was told on the phone, well, we did do a scan and there was no atopic. So just take it. It's a miscarriage and just allow it all kind of happen at home.
Isn't that disgraceful?
Yeah. At that stage, I just didn't know what to do. Like, I wasn't told whether it was a miscarriage. I didn't even get my bloods at that stage to see about my HCG levels. I hadn't even got my bloods taken. I just had, when I went to the emergency department, all I got was my urine tested to make sure I was pregnant and a scan. That was it. And then just to come back down to the early pregnancy assessment unit in the Kiln 2 days later. So 2 days later, I went back and I was still bleeding quite heavily. And I remember sitting there and there's all like where you're sitting, there's all people like that. Like there's all ladies that would be sitting there, would have probably already had a scan the week before and he's seen a heartbeat, but he just need another scan. So I was kind of sitting there and I was like, what am I in for when I go in? Like, could it be possible that they do see a heartbeat now? Could it be possible that the sack now looks normal?
Mm.
So everything was going through my head. And I remember poor Dylan sitting beside me and he was answering all my questions. Mm. And he's like, Shauna, we just have to wait and see. But you know what? That's kind of,
yeah.
You know, when you're pregnant as well, like, and with me HCG levels being so high, I was even more sensitive, you know. And I remember going in to the doctor and the doctor was actually pregnant herself. This was another doctor that was looking after me and she'd done the scan as well. And she said, it just looks so abnormal, this sack. I'm going to have to send you home again, or if not, I'm going to have to, I think what I can see, she said, is a miscarriage. But she said, we'll probably have to give you tablets to bring on the miscarriage. But while I was sitting in the waiting room, I had heard all of other women saying, oh, don't ever take them tablets. You can end up like needing an ambulance to come back in after like with severe Christ. Heavy bleeding and stuff like that and really bad pains. So Dylan kept saying to me, Shauna, please, if that is the case, just please get the DNC. And my fear is being put asleep. So I kept saying, oh, no, I'll probably just go with the tablets. But at this kind of stage where we were at then, when she started kind of mentioning miscarriage, she never once mentioned anything else like mole or pregnancy or anything like that at this stage. So then again, I was told to come back a week later. So I had to go through the whole week in that pain with the bleeding getting worse and worse. Like I couldn't even leave the house. I was bedbound. Even the kids, because they were used to mommy being up and out, and I couldn't even, literally not even move. It was like, all they could explain was the bleeding was, it was like having, you know, after having a baby, that type of heavy bleeding. And I kept bringing them, oh no, just come back. So I ended up going back the following week and I just met this lovely, lovely doctor that looked after me until the end. So she came in and I went into the room and I just started crying. I just said, I've been through so much. I haven't slept. I lost so much weight as well, Rebecca. Within that space of that 10 days, I lost so much weight because I wasn't eating. I was so sick. The pregnancy symptoms was just really, like, really, really bad. Not for that many weeks. This shouldn't be that bad. I couldn't even hold down water. I was vomiting. Certain smells was just really bad. And I remember saying to the doctor when I went into the room to her, and she goes, you've been through so much from looking at your, looking back at your, like your bile and stuff like that. You've been through so much. And I said, I really have been. I said, I just want someone to tell me what's going on. And she says to me, how many weeks do you reckon you are? And I said, now I'd be probably 8 weeks. I said, because when I added it up, like, and when I first came in as well, I'm not that far gone. But I said, like, this morning I woke up, I said, and I have a full-on bump. And she asked me to stand up, and she goes, yeah. She said, I did notice that, like, my stomach was, it looked like I was 5 months pregnant.
Oh, my God.
And I remember kind of looking, and she brought in another doctor at that stage. And the other doctor, they were kind of looking at each other, and Dylan was sitting there as well. And I said, do you reckon, like, it could be something, like bad? And she was like, no, what we'll do is we'll do the scan and we'll go from there. But I had been Googling. Like, you know, that's what I'd always Google and look up my symptoms. And I remember coming up molar pregnancy, and right beside molar pregnancy was cancer.
Right.
And I remember saying it to Dylan while this was all going on, waiting for it to go back to the early pregnancy assessment unit. And I remember saying, Dylan was like, Shauna, stop.
Your mind just goes there.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, it's always thinking the worst. Mm. Just stop and wait until I doubt it. I nearly guarantee he kept saying to me to reassure me, it's not a molar. So I went and she done the scan. And I just remember lying there while she was doing the scan and her eyes went huge. And I remember like this feeling, this blood rush from my body. And I said, like, I start talking. I was like, is it bad? Is it bad? And she was like, Shauna, just relax, because we need to take these pictures, these images. Just relax, please, just relax. So I was lying there. Dylan, I could see the blood rushing from Dylan, and he's not the type to worry. But I knew then he was worrying, because we could sense it in the room. So she got up and she said, I'm just going to get this doctor back that has already been here. I just want her to have a look. So she came in. Her eyes went huge as well. And I was like, oh God, this is bad. I'm going to be told something really bad. So she said, Shauna, I'm just going to step out of the room. She said, you can get yourself, sorted and come back out to me then. So I never forget. I remember getting ready so fast and running out. And I said, just please, just take me out. It was like misery. I said, please, and just tell me. And she goes, Shauna, I do think, she said, you're having a molar pregnancy. So Dylan remembers me saying that.
Yeah.
And he just looks at me and he goes, oh my God, like, are you sure? And she goes, I'm not sure, she said. And I said, is it cancer? And she goes, I don't know. I really don't know, she said. All I can say to you is we're going to have to do so much tests. And if it is, she says, we're going to look after you. And I remember hugging me. And she's like, I haven't. It's not something we see every day. She said, if it is a molar pregnancy, she said, it's extremely, extremely rare. And I remember saying, oh, my God, trust me. Like, if it is, you know, the typical toss that goes through your head. And she goes, just wait and see. She says, so what I'm going to do is, she says, now I'm going to speak to a consultant and I'm going to let him have a look at the images.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And then I'm going to send you up to get your bloods done. If your blood test, your HCG levels, was to come back that your HCG levels is really high, she said, you'll be hearing from me tonight. So this was at like around 4 o'clock. She said, like, you'll be hearing from me. I'll get it on my bleeper and I'll have to ring you. And you'd be coming in for surgery in the morning. So I remember getting my bloods done. And I remember then walking out of Coombe. And Dylan was just silent. That's how you know when Dylan's really worried. He goes quiet. Because he's normally full of chat like myself. Mm. And I says, Dylan, what are we going to do if it is? And he kept saying, you shouldn't have just Googled it. You should, don't. You heard it because the doctor had said to me before I left. She goes, Shauna, I tell this to anyone that has had having a molar. Do not Google what a molar is, because you will freak yourself out and you probably will end up back in. She said, just don't. But me being me, I had already Googled it before I even went in, like my symptoms, and that's what it came up. So I remember even seeing the scan, Rebecca, on the scan, it's a weird shape. So it's kind of like, all I could explain is it's a circle, but it's like 100, 200 grapes. That's what it looked like, little water sacks. So it's just, that's exactly the way she explained it to me. It's just like little grapes. So I've never seen anything like this. And it looked so big. And even when she took the measurements of it, I could see that's when she was getting really concerned, because then she was looking at the size of my stomach as well. And it was measuring very big as well, for more than what I should have been as well. Like even the sack size was more than what I should have been. So it was, I knew. Even when she said it, we're not guaranteed that it is a molar. But as I said, I'll ring you if the bloods come back that they're really high, because I'm putting urgent on these for these blood tests to come back as soon as. So I went back to my mum's house, and I remember telling my mum has had four of us. And she goes, molar? I never even heard of it. Mm. And I says, yeah, I said, like, I did before, like when I'd be Googling or whatever. I said, but it can mean like I have cancer. And I remember my mum just, she was crying and she just couldn't believe it. She's like, don't think that way now. We just have to be strong. And no matter what, if it is, you're going to get through. We're going to be beside you. And, you know, you have Dylan and you have the kids to fight for. Just don't be thinking of that until you know. So I kept my phone beside me at all times because she told me to keep it beside me. So I got to around 8 o'clock and I had heard nothing. So I was like, oh God, it must be good news because she told me if you don't hear from me, take it, it's good. So at about 10 past 8, my phone rang and it was the doctor. And she goes, hey, Shauna, it's, I'm just calling you just to let you know. She says, I'm after getting your blood results, she says, and it's not good. And I'll never forget it. The room spun. I nearly collapsed. I genuinely nearly collapsed. And I said, are you serious? And she goes, I'm serious. She said, it's real. She said, your levels is extremely high. Like my HCG levels was 98,000.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
And she's like, Shauna, I need you to get your bag packed. I need you to kiss your babies and tell your babies you'll be home soon, but I need you in the first thing in the morning for 5:30 in the morning. And I need you to, you're going to need surgery. You're going to have to get this removed immediately. What I went through, oh my God, it was just horrendous. I remember all that night, all I done, I never slept. All I done was cry because all I could. And I remember saying to her on the phone, is it cancer? And she was like, we don't know yet. We have to get it removed. We have to send it away to the lab for testing and stuff like that. And I have no words, honestly. And even thinking back then, the things I was thinking, even going down for surgery, like I kept saying, because I have von Willebrand's disease. So it's a bleeding disorder.
Okay.
So my mum has it. My sisters have it as well. And I remember thinking back, so basically, if you're going for surgery and stuff, you can have a hemorrhage more quicker than anyone else.
Okay.
So I remember saying to myself, I never told them that. So I remember ringing her back and I told her, I said, oh, I also have von Willebrand's. And her whole voice changed. She was like, oh, did you tell? I said, when I first went to A&E, I told them. I said, I don't know whether to put it down on my chart. I said, if you want, I'm not too sure. And she goes, oh, Shauna, she says, we need doctors from St. James's Hospital. So I need you to go to James's in the morning. I need you to get bloods because I would need to go on a drip to kind of help with the before surgery and stuff like that. So I had to go to James's the following morning. I had to get whether it was okay to go for surgery. So they wouldn't allow me go for surgery that day. Because they had to wait to see what my results was, to see what I needed before surgery was to take place. So I had surgery 3 days later. So I had to wait 3 days later and they brought me in to scan me and it was getting bigger. So they were like, we need to do this. So I remember it was a Thursday morning. I went in, I went in at 6:30. And I was like, oh my God, I think I hadn't taken a panic attack in years. And I actually took a panic attack in the car park. I kept saying it to Dylan, I'm not going in. And he was like, you have to think of who's at home. Your two babies is at home. They're my life. And I kept saying, I have to, you just have to go. And I remember just walking in. And when I walked in then, I went up to the ward and stuff like that. And I met about 15 or 16 doctors, more doctors than I even had on my C-section. Because when you have a molar, you have more chances of hemorrhaging, where I wasn't aware of that. When they're removing it, you have more chances of a hemorrhage, where I already have von Willebrand. So it was really, it was serious enough. So when I was in the ward, I was dealing with all these doctors and stuff like that. They were asking me, how have I been? And they were kind of examining my stomach and they were saying, your stomach is very enlarged. And it was hard as well. It was kind of shaped like a proper bump. Like I have a photo and stuff on my phone. I remember looking back and saying, oh my God, it wasn't normal. And I knew it wasn't normal because, you can tell your own body. I could always tell even from my other pregnancies, a healthy pregnancy and something that's not right. So I went down for surgery. I remember being put asleep, and there were so many doctors around. Like, there was doctors even from James's as well that was corresponding with my doctors. And I remember saying to the doctor, I'm afraid I'm going to die. And then I'm afraid if I wake up that I'm going to have to face, you know, I don't know what I'm going to have to face. And I remember him, he was so lovely. He kept rubbing my hand. He was like, Shauna, just go to sleep. You're going to be okay. We're here to mind you. We're going to watch you. And it's only normal to have that fear, because all I kept saying, what if I don't wake up for me kids? And when they put me asleep, it felt like I was only asleep for about 15 minutes. Well, I wasn't. I would have been out for a lot longer. And my auntie's working the kiln as well. Okay. So when I woke up, my auntie works down like where I was having the surgery. Like, she works there. And I remember waking up, I remember seeing her. And I was like, oh, thank God, I'm seeing someone I know. And they thankfully as well allowed Dylan sit outside the theatre as well, which was great, because my auntie works there. But I remember waking up and she was like, Shauna, we've got it. We've took it all away. And I still, Rebecca, I still didn't know what an actual molar pregnancy was. No one had really told me. They were just more worried about removing it as soon as. And I remember, like, when I woke up and I went back up to the ward, and I asked, loads of doctors came back around to me and they said it was quite very enlarged. Like, it's so, a molar pregnancy is a placenta.
Okay.
So the placenta was really, really big. And I remember asking, like, I was like, what would cause this? And they were like, so there's a partial molar and a complete molar. And I was like, what does that mean? So they were like, the partial molar is basically when the egg was fertilized, two sperm went to the egg. Where a complete molar is where there was no chromosome, so there was no DNA in the egg. And that would be kind of the woman's end. And then the partial molar is the kind of from the man.
Okay.
And I remember saying, oh, this is a lot to take in. But they were like, we don't know which one you've had, whether it's partial or a complete. And I said, well, what's the worst to have? And he goes, a complete. And I said, what, in what way? And they're like, there's a higher chance you could need chemotherapy, Shauna. And I was like, oh, really? And they're like, yeah, you could need chemo. There's actually a big possibility that can happen. And I remember looking at Dylan saying, because Dylan kept saying to me, they'll just get removed and you'll be okay. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. And I remember looking at Dylan saying, you told me. Like,
I told you so.
And so I remember sitting there and I was just trying to take everything in. But, you know, I was all over the place. But the doctor did say, the bit of reassurance that I'm going to give you, I feel like we've got everything. And I says, what happens if you haven't? And she goes, if you haven't, you're in big trouble because it can spread. And I says, it's spread where? And she goes, it can spread to your lungs, can spread to your kid, like anywhere. And so I says, what do I do now? And she says, so what you do is now, she says, you're going to be a big part, the coom is going to be a big part of your life for the next 9 months. And I says, in what way? I still didn't know. And I says, so what happens now? So she said, you go home. If we're happy with you, you go home. And every week for 4 months, you come and get your bloods in the coom and you get scanned as well. So I was like, okay, that's fine. She goes, if at any stage, she says, your HCG level, she said, so they're 90, they were 96, 98,000, something like that. If they don't start going down, and if they were to start going up, she said, if they go up, you're in big trouble. But if they start to go down, she said, it means that has what we have taken from you, it's gone. So I remember I went back the following week. And that when I came out, I'll never forget how I felt. I actually ended up in the doctor. I was all over the place. It was like after having a baby for the whole 9 months and then having... You know, when you're after having a baby and you're kind of all over the place, you're crying, and that's what it was like. But they told Dylan to expect that because I've had such loads of hormones in my body.
Yeah.
And now they would just have to come crashing down because they had taken that from me. Mm. So my body didn't know what was going on. So the following week, I went to the coom and I got my blood tests done. And when my blood results came back, so I used to always get them done on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And on a Wednesday, I'd be waiting at the phone for the results. When I got the results on the Wednesday, they hadn't moved. They were still the same. So I asked him, was this, can this be normal? And he said, it can be. And sometimes it can mean this is going the opposite way. So then they transferred me then onto midwives and doctors down in Cork. So these specialise in molar pregnancies. And these were just amazing. These got me, with Dylan and my parents and my family around me, and these two nurses got me through it all. They were just amazing. And I remember them ringing me. And then they would do kind of Zoom and stuff like that. They were doing, you know, talking to me over to ask me how I am. And I remember them asking, like, what would have caused this? And how will I know it's a complete or a partial? And they said, well, what happens is, Shauna, we're after sending it away. Mm. It was quite big, like really big. Your levels is not coming down, but we're going to see what way it's going. And next week's, they could come down. They could decline, like, rapidly. So just hang in there and try to be as positive as you can.
But you being you and your personality, you're probably just manic, were you?
Rebecca, I couldn't even leave the apartment. Like, I was literally, I'll never forget it. And then with the hormones as well, they were still kind of, they weren't as high, but they didn't come down as much as they wanted them to come down. Like, they wanted a massive drop. Mm. So the following week then I went back and it came down slightly. So this went on for 4 months of every week.
Jesus waiting. Christ.
And, you know, like, the doctors from Cork ringing me. Then I was told then from the comb, I remember ringing and saying to them, like, have you heard anything about the molar? Like, is it a complete or a partial? Like, when will I know? And I remember, like, some of the midwives saying, we haven't got much research on molar. We're not sure. We wouldn't deal with it. Like, and I was like, who do I go to for help? Mm. Like, who do I go to ask, like, what caused it?
Like, does it happen again? All those
will
things.
It happen again if I ever do ever try again? Who do I, Cork will look after you. So, like, I used to be able to, they used to text me. We just got a really close bond. Like, I got a close bond with the midwives and they used to text me. And they'd be like, right, Shauna, the way it is now, we're still waiting for your results. You have to go back for your bloods on Tuesday. We have no evidence behind of what causes a molar pregnancy. So, really, people that would have a molar pregnancy would be anyone before the age of 20 or anyone over the age of 40.
Okay.
I was 29. So they had no, like, and I kept saying, I remember saying, like, I've done everything right. I took my vitamins. I was eating.
Why
healthy.
Do we do that?
I know. I've never drank. I've never smoked. Mm. Like, everything was gone. And she's like, Shauna, you did nothing wrong. But I blamed myself. Like, even, I'd done nothing wrong. But here I was, would have been like, I remember, like, I could have took, would have been the Paris, everything was going through my head, just silly things. And when I think back, I'm like, I actually thought of that, where I'd done nothing wrong. I took me folic acid, I'd done, you know, like, this baby would have been loved, adored, and really wanted. So I kept saying, it was out of my hands what had happened to me, you know?
Completely.
Completely. And then, when I went back then, I used to go back every week. So basically how a molar pregnancy works is when you have a molar pregnancy, you have to go back for 9 months. So it's like doing a full pregnancy, like all the way through the whole 9 months. So I used to go back on weeks and I'd be sitting waiting for my blood tests with all pregnant women. And I remember getting beside this lovely lady and she was talking to me. Like, as I said, I'd be like yourself. I talked to the wall, to be honest, Rebecca. And I remember sitting there and she said, oh, how far gone are you? And I says, oh, I fortunately had a molar pregnancy. And I remember all the other women that were sitting around. I just remember everyone kind of looking at me and saying, did you say molar? Mm. And I says, yeah, a molar pregnancy. Because, oh, I'm on my fourth child or I'm on my second or I've never heard of that. And no one. I actually haven't met anyone that has had one or that has heard of it so far. Mm. And I remember sitting there and I said, you've never heard of it. And I remember going into the midwife when I was getting a checkup, and I said it to her. I was like, I was speaking to all the ladies out there and they've never heard of a molar pregnancy. And she goes, to be honest, shit, Sean, it's really, really, like, very rare. Mm-hmm. She said, like, it's 1 in 1,000 that would have a molar pregnancy. She said it wouldn't be like something you'd see every single day, and especially a woman your age. Mm. It's not something you'd see. And even hearing that, like, from an actual, like, from a person like that is, you know, works in a maternity hospital. Mm. She's a nurse, a staff nurse. I was kind of, so what, like, if she doesn't know anything about it, where do I kind of stand?
And isn't it, like, because I know we did, lovely Melissa, she had a miscarriage. She's then gone on to have a rainbow baby, thankfully. But it is, it, like, you've had to deal with that, but also you've lost a baby.
Yeah, of something that, that what could have been.
Mm.
You know that way? And so I was dealing with that, whether I would need chemotherapy, whether it's spread, is my levels going to go down every single week, sitting in that waiting room with all other pregnant women.
Mm.
And some pregnant women that should have been even around my weeks. You know, you'd get talking and chatting. And that's exactly, and no one kind of, when you'd say molar pregnancy, like, some people would just think I was just a miscarriage.
Yeah, but this is not because it, but also the baby, was there ever a baby there?
No.
No.
At this, when I first went, I remember them saying, one of the midwives had said, because you were kind of listening to different, you know, different people's opinions. And I remember one of the midwives saying, oh, they could see some. I myself really thought I could as well.
Mm.
But I've asked that question and I haven't been really. Yeah.
And that doesn't negate from the fact that you lost what was potentially going to be a baby.
Yeah, that's exactly, like, you know, it's just. And I think the thing that really got me as well was there was no kind of awareness. There was no one there. Like, I remember even talking to the doctor, even in the kiln, and she didn't even know much about it. And she doesn't know what causes it. She said, I genuinely have no answers for you. She said, I don't know what to say to you.
But also the fact that, and the same for Melissa, was that, like, you're sitting there with water, like, why do they not have a bloody area that you can go in and that you don't have to see?
Yeah.
When you're going through one of the most traumatic things a woman can ever go through. Why do they not have an area in every single maternity hospital
that
you can go to that you don't have to see a pregnant lady?
Yeah, and that has never happened to me. Every week, like, I remember, I was only recently discharged, thank God. But I remember, like, I used to go, sometimes I'd be on my lunch break and I'd go down from the funeral home down to the kiln. And I remember I used to pray. So I used to kind of, my break would be from 1 to 2. And I used to say, if I leave at 1 and I get down there for 1:10, it's only down the road, maybe all of the pregnant women are gone. And it'd be nothing. It'd be just for myself. Because I'd hate, because the majority of every woman would say to you, oh, how far gone are you?
Yeah.
And I'd hate having to explain.
Yeah.
And then I'd know I'd get the reaction of a molar. What's a molar?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember.
You relive that. Every week.
I can't even. For 9 months. Every week.
Jesus Christ.
It was horrendous. Like, literally horrendous. Then they sent me to a counsellor. Because they say they do this for all pregnant women. That's been going through, like, a molar and stuff like that. And I remember going to the counsellor. And I remember saying, like, I've nothing really to say. Like, all I am, I'm worried. And she goes, yeah, it can potentially, like, it can spread. Like, she was telling me. Where it was making my anxiety worse. I didn't want her to say, well, Sean, it can't spread, or, you know, like, you're going to be okay. She didn't know whether I was going to be okay. I didn't know, like, no one knew. And, but still, it didn't help me, to be honest. The thing that helped me was Dylan and my parents and my sisters and my brother, to be honest with you, and my children. They were me, to where I'd go to and get me through it. Like, I just got through that. Like, it was probably, apart from the bullying all those years back, this as well was probably the darkest kind of time period in my life, that it was really, really low, like, really, really down. And I kept explaining that to the doctor. Every time I'd go back to the coom, I'd be like, why do I feel this way? And she goes, because your levels were so high. It was like if you were 9 months pregnant, mm-hmm. and then it was taken from you. Because that's what your level should be like when you're way into your pregnancy, not when you're.
When did they start to come down, and then what did they tell you?
So basically when they started to come down was around August last year. I noticed they went massively down. And I remember celebrating. I was so excited, but they kept telling me you could never get your hopes built up. And I remember like jumping up, no, this is great. They've come down. She's like, Shauna, stop. Because what can happen is you can go the following week and you can go back up. So all I'd done was lived on my nerves, being honest. I was so worried. Dylan was the same. He was going around. He was in a different world, as he said. It was a horrific time for us. And I remember going back every week and he started coming down, coming down, coming down. But then the last couple of weeks, they wouldn't. They just stayed. So when that was happening then, they start talking about Vincent's Hospital and stuff like that. That there's a doctor there that deals with if I did need some chemotherapy to help bring them down. So I then got the results that same day. I was told that I got the results, and I asked, is it a partial or a complete? And he told me, unfortunately, it's a complete molar. And I says, what exactly would that mean? So they were saying, what it can mean is a partial molar, you have less chances of needing chemotherapy. A complete molar, you have something like 80% needing chemotherapy. So at that stage, I freaked. I was like, oh God. So they done further tests, and I had to go for a different test to make sure that it was still like everything had, like nothing had grown again, or, you know, like nothing had spread or anything like that. And I remember going for that and then waiting for the results for another week. So then when I went back the following week, the HCG levels would not come down. They were on 1,000. So they went from 98,000. Then they went down, I remember, to 13,000. And then they went down. But when they got to 1,000, they wouldn't come down. And I remember ringing the midwife in Cork, because they're the only really ones that deal with molar pregnancy. Like Hollistry wouldn't have anyone like Cork or the Coom or the Rotunda. It's Cork. So everyone, if anyone has a molar pregnancy within those hospitals, you get referred down to Cork, the maternity hospital down there, and they correspond with you. They give you your results. So it's because they're the only ones that know about it. So like you feel like you're attending the Coom, but they don't have much knowledge about it. Where down in Cork, they would know so much about it. So you have to kind of, you're either ringing them or they're ringing you and they're kind of telling you. But going back to when I found out it was a complete molar, they said, we'll just have to continue doing what you're doing instead of it now. Because I remember when I first got diagnosed with the molar pregnancy, I was told it could be all over within 6 months, but if it's complete, it'll be 9 months. So I knew then I had to do every single week for another couple of months. It was just so hard. So
at what point did they say to you, you're good?
December, just of last year.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And what did they say?
So I actually went into the Coom Hospital and they done my bloods and he said, fingers crossed, this is going to be good. And I remember I was in work that day and I remember ringing Dylan and I says, Dylan, please God, this could be my final bloods. He says, just wait and see. As they'd always say to me, don't get your hopes built up. You don't know. Things can change. So I went in, got my bloods done and he said, we'll be in touch within 24 hours. So 24 hours later, I got called to come back in. So I was like, oh, they must have went up. Everything was racing through my head. I was off work that day. So everything was going through my head. So I remember going into the Coom and Dylan met me there. And I met this lovely doctor again. She was really nice. And she set me down and she said, Sean, she said, we've got your results back. She says, I'm going to take you out of your misery. She said, because I know that's what we have been the last couple of months. It's been really hard for you. And anyone that is going through a molar, she said, it's really, really hard on your mental health. So she set me down. She said, John, it's good news. Your levels have come down. And I remember I was only short of jumping up and down and screaming. I was delighted. And she turned around. She says, so your levels has completely come down. She says, but I need to tell you something as well. And I says, yeah. She goes, I'm just letting you know, she said, you are a walking miracle. And I says, in what way? And she goes, when we got the results, it was a tumour. And she said, you had 94-95% chance of needing chemotherapy. And she said, Shauna, that would have been a total different road for you. She said, all you can do is thank your surgeon, she said, because they made sure they got everything. She said, only for them, if they would have literally left like a little tiny little dot, a speck, she said, you would have been going down chemotherapy, she said, could have spread. Because most molars spread to your lungs. Whatever it is, it's always to your lungs. And that's what they always used to say to me. Have you got a cough? Have you any breath? Like, are you breathless or stuff like that? And I'm like, no, nothing like that. And they're like, that's good. And I used to always wonder. And I remember saying it to them, what does that mean? They were like, oh, we're just afraid it's going to spread. So then she said, we're going to, you're just so lucky. Like, you're a miracle. Someone was looking over you. She said, because we're like also in shock that you didn't need chemotherapy and that your levels just magically came down. She was like, it's literally incredible. And then she said, we are going to discharge you. And I says, what's the chances of this happening again?
In the moment when she tells you that she's going to discharge you, is there relief or are you scared?
I was scared as well. Like, really scared. And I remember I started crying in front of her. And she said, this is a good thing, because all these months, because they all got to know me so well. Because I was always in and out. Then the midwives in Cork, as I said, they had my mobile number, they used to ring me. And I got to know them. So they were like, we're going to miss you now. And I was like, but I'm scared that he's a discharge of me. Like, I feel mixed emotions. She goes, this is normal. I said, but I feel like I want to keep coming. I was so used to it. I wanted a reassurance that I was going to be okay. I was like, what about now? Next week, I'm not coming to get me bloods. And what about if it comes back? She goes, Shauna, it's really unlikely. You've been here the last 9 months. And it's very unlikely that that will happen. But just watch out for symptoms. But I even remember like standing up, and she gave me a hug, and she says, ah, sure, one day, because they would have known my aunties and stuff like that. And she says, I'll make sure you come in and pop in and say hello again. And I remember saying, she goes, please, she says, you are only young. She's like, you are only, I was 29, 30 then. And she's like, you are only 30. If you want to try again, you can. And I remember looking at her and I said, I'll never. This has scarred me. Like, I was done. And I remember even standing up, and she was like, oh no, right now you're hurting, because I never had time to grieve. Because as she says to me, she's like, you are grieving for something that could have been and it wasn't, but you are also worrying about of what was it going to, where you're going to be down the road of chemotherapy for a pregnancy, for something to go so happy, to finding out you're pregnant. To go, just like, we are terrified that you're going to
die possibly.
You know, and even though, like, she did used to reassure me, used to say, like, Sean, if it is that you need chemo, it is a good possibility that you will be fine, because anyone that has had a molar pregnancy, even though they're uncommon, they have come through the other side. But I kept saying,
your mentality doesn't, you don't think that way. No. You always think of the thing. And can I ask you, like, so December, so we're still very raw, very things. So today, where are you about getting pregnant again? And how's Dylan on your decisions, or what decisions you've made?
Being honest, we walked out of Kilm. I remember we walked out of Kilm on the day of the surgery. Sorry, the day after the surgery, because they kept me in. And we walked out of Kilm, and the two of us looked at each other and we said, never again. Never again. And even though, like, they told me, they said, Shauna, there's a chance that it can happen again. I'm not going to lie. But you can go again, because you have got youth on your side. Like, to go again, Never. We've made a decision. Yeah, never. We are really happy with what we have at home. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just, like, I was asking the ladies down in Cork, I said, have you ever seen that it has happened again? Mm-hmm. And she goes, I'm not going to lie to you. She said, Shauna, it has. And even hearing that, Rebecca, it frightened me. I just couldn't go through that again.
I wonder if anyone has gone through it and got pregnant and had a normal pregnancy after it.
I have heard of people. Mm. I did ask her that as well. Katerina was the lady that was looking after me down there, and Stacey. And I remember saying it to them. I said, have you ever heard of good? And she said, yeah, all the time. People have went on to have 3 or 4 babies after it. She said, this doesn't mean that this is the end for you. But it just took so much out of me. Like that every week, not being told you can't get excited. Even if your levels was coming slightly down, I could never get myself excited. So I was constantly down on the,
But that'd wear you down, even going in there every week to get a blood test would just wear you down.
Yeah.
Like physically and like more mentally, but like physically it would as well.
Yeah. And I remember them saying it to me when I did get discharged. They were like, Sean, you can kind of hit rock bottom now and you can kind of be all over the place now. And I says, oh, and she goes, because for the last 9 months, every week you've been building yourself to come in here. You've been fighting to come in here. And now that this is over, you're going to say to yourself, oh, this is what I've been through. You know, like
it's going to hit you.
And it did. December was horrendous for me. I was suffering with my anxiety and stuff like that. It was up, I was down. Like I'm a very happy person. Like you'd never know I suffer with anxiety, but in other ways I would. Like I'd be a terrible worrier. You know, like I'd worry constantly. And I remember even in December when I was discharged, all I kept thinking is it going to come back? And they're no longer checking me. But touch wood, now with it being March, I have been doing a lot better.
Yeah, how are you today?
Yeah, a lot better. So I've been kept busy. So I've been as wedding planning and stuff like that, work and being a mammy. Yeah, so I have, like, don't get me wrong, this day is, it hits me. Like, I remember when I came up to, because when I first went into the kiln, they gave me of when I would be due the baby at the start. So they'll all, once you get kind of over them, you know, little kind of hiccups like that. And then when I was in my local shopping centre up where my mum and dad lives in the square there the other day with my sister. And I remember speaking to a girl when I went in with the molar pregnancy in the early pregnancy assessment unit. And she had said, oh, I'm have to find now the baby has a perfect heartbeat and stuff like that. I seen her in the square with her baby. So we would have been, her babies would have been, you know, like little things like that.
Yeah.
But this was only, what day is it today? Friday. So this would have been Wednesday when I was in the square. And that, and I remember saying to my sister Megan, I was like, oh, isn't that mad? And she's like, oh, yeah, look, it's our babies. Yeah, I said, oh, that girl was in the kiln when I was there.
That's a kick in the gut for you.
Yeah.
But, and this is again, I think what Melissa's saying to me, like, people move on.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone around you moves on. But like that moment for you.
Yeah.
Like, got you in the throat, got you in the stomach, and you're like,
I really did. Yeah. And even then, in January, when I was supposed to do this, but then I had to cancel because I lost my uncle suddenly as well. So, while I was kind of, after being discharged from hospital in December, I had a bad kind of December. And even hearing those words, like, you had such a high possibility of needing this or a spreading, that alone got me. And then I went into January then, and then I lost someone very close to us, my uncle as well. So it's been tough. But
what are you going to do just to, like, what are you doing to mind yourself, and what are you doing to protect yourself?
So I'm basically keeping myself busy, keeping more positive.
And that's hard, isn't it? Yeah. It is hard.
It is.
Like when you are such a worrier.
I know.
To kind of change that mindset.
I don't think, I think I'll always be a worrier till the day I die, but being honest, like even with the kids,
yeah,
there's something small wrong with them. I've always been like that. And maybe that's because of the anxiety all those years back. Because I remember even like when I was suffering with panic attacks and stuff like that. And I remember the counselor saying, you will carry something on, whether it's you worry a lot. It'll be something you'll always carry on with you. So maybe I'm just always going to be.
And Dylan keeping you sane.
Dylan, yeah, he's the positive one ever saw. Yes, he really is. He's the one. Shauna, stop thinking that, or you know, just keep positive. So he does, yeah. We work well together that way. I'm the negative one, he's the positive one.
And on that note, Shauna, we leave it there.
Ah, lovely.
Thank you so much. Oh,
thank you so much, Rebecca. It's lovely speaking to you.
And see, you weren't nervous at all.
I know.
Just for everyone, Dave, can you just, I know you've notes, what was the gestation you said you had?
So the molar pregnancy is gestational trauma-blasted disease.
Okay.
So so it's just really, it's very rare. It's 1 in 1,000, and it can happen. And I just kind of want to kind of raise awareness as well. If I don't want someone to, like, I was even thinking of setting up some type of page if anyone wanted to talk.
You should.
You know, like, just because I'll never forget how alone I felt. And even I can't imagine someone out there now finding out, just say for today, oh, it's a molar pregnancy.
You should set something up on Instagram or Facebook. Do that.
Because there's literally nothing out there.
Because it'd be just for someone to hear. Like, if you had someone who could just give you a bit of advice or tell you you're going to be okay, it probably would have helped you a little bit.
It really would have. Even for someone to say, oh, Shauna, I was through the same.
Yeah. You know, where I am
now. It's not strange that you have this and look where I am now. I'm after going on to where I am. Yeah, I'd love to be able to help someone else.
Do it.
I will.
All right. And when this podcast goes out, we'll just tag it all in then as well.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Shauna, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.